Dr. Peter Dautre comes up with weed management.
As I was driving here, I was kind of feeling sorry for myself that I was going to be on after lunch, and that's a tough time to keep everybody kind of engaged because the food's starting to settle in and you're getting sleepy. And now I'm really feeling sorry for myself that I have to follow you. So great presentation. I'm going to agree with you, first of all. This is also one of my favorite meetings to go to. It's always well-organized, great venue, and usually very good participation in Q&A. So I agree with Tiffany there. A few of the other things she said, I guess I'm just going to be honest. There's no one in this room that has kept me up at night. I may worry about you during the day, but I'm not so much worried about you at night. But if I can assist you in your weed control decisions and efforts, call me during the day, and I'll worry right along with you. I guess that didn't go over very well, but anyway. So we're going to talk about weed control. I'm going to lead this discussion. I'm leading this discussion. I'm going to share with you things that you already know. I'm actually going to share some of my time with one of my graduate students, and I'll be passing out something when she presents some information to you, and I'm going to give you some data, limited data, on some things maybe we've learned most recently. We're going to conclude with some futuristic opportunities that we may have in cotton and grain sorghum here in a couple of years, and I'm going to point you to a website where all of you will need to go if you plan to apply paraquat in the year 2020. So let's start with a couple of images of some fields. Now, I don't know if these are your fields. They probably weren't your field in 2019, but maybe they were your field in 2016 or 2017. We've certainly had some challenging situations, primarily as it relates to the resistance of some of our weeds to the herbicides that we're using. This is an image more recently, and I believe in my travels last year, I saw a lot more fields that looked like this than looked like the previous slide. I think you're doing a very good job with the technologies that we have. Now, to me, there is no one recipe. Some of you have likely adopted and embraced some of the newer auxin technology. I think fields can be also clean with some of the more traditional or conventional varieties. The way we manage the weeds are going to be slightly different, but I believe it can be done pretty much in all germplasms. Of course, much of that is dependent on inputs and the timeliness of some of those inputs, which we're going to talk about. This field right here had recently received some foliar spray, and I don't know if you can see the carcasses there in the middle, but there are some plants here that likely received the spray about 2 weeks ago. My guess is this field probably also received some residual application of something at this time. Could have been S-metolachlor, could have been Warren, could have been Outlook, something that hopefully will help carry this field further along following any kind of irrigation or rainfall event. So here's a slide that's attempting to show two very different fields, one field not so clean, the other one very clean, and I'm of the opinion the difference in inputs, the difference in strategies between these two situations probably wasn't that great. I think we could very easily design a situation where weed control is going to fail. I think we could pretty easily design a very intensively managed field, lots of inputs, where the field is going to be very clean. But sometimes I think the difference between success and failure may come down to simply one input, or it may simply come down to something such as the timeliness of that input, or the carrier volume, or the adjuvant, or the conditions that predispose that weed prior to the herbicide application. Sometimes the difference between what we would call success and something not so successful could be quite small, like those examples. So you're well aware of this. A survey that we conducted several years ago, we were looking for where is the hot spot of Palmer amaranth resistance. And unfortunately, it's where you are. It's where I am. Now, additional studies also showed what was the internal mechanism. And maybe you've heard me share this with you before, but I think briefly it's important to know weeds are resistant to herbicides for a wide array of reasons. What we found in this particular trial servicing a bunch of locations in Texas, it was primarily due to the enzyme that the herbicide binds to. And if that weed is producing a bunch of that enzyme, there's no way we can overcome resistance by applying more herbicide. And for those of you that would like to argue that point, which is okay, I would say when we first found resistance, that was one of our strategies. Because I think early on, we may have overcome resistance with more herbicides, but today we can't. So we need to be thinking more in terms of what are the other options? And of those other options, how do those herbicides control the weeds differently based on the mode of action of those other inputs? Tiffany kept using a term, DNR. And I'm in the back thinking DNA. So in this presentation, the theme has to be more starting clean. And how do we start clean? Well, it may involve the use of a DNA, a dinitroaniline herbicide. And for those in this room that are still conventionally tilled, I'm of the opinion that the trifluralin and the pendimethalin, and there's many different trade names of those products, are a very good baseline treatment to assist in successful weed management. For those of you that are more minimum till, strip till, no-till, it may not be the DNA, but it likely is some other residual that we're using. And we may be using it pre-plant followed by something at plant. But it's that first base treatment that I think can lead to successful control at the end of the growing season. So in your clean fields and the other clean fields that we saw in 2019, what was the recipe? Well, I don't know if it was one recipe, but here are principles. It was starting clean. It was timely applications. It likely contained some residual herbicide. If not pre-plant, at plant, early post, mid-post, late post, all of the above, which are pretty intensively managed fields, but somewhere along the line, we're helping our foliar herbicides with some residual activity of any number of products, whether it be the DNA, whether it be the Cotteran Caprol, whether it be the Valor, I've already mentioned S-metulachlor Outlook, or even at the end of the year, Diuron. And I may be stealing, Delaney, a little bit of your thunder, but in the handout, she's going to present all of the options that we currently have. And then lastly, and you've heard me say this before, but if I'd like to say it again, it's controlling escapes. Some of our data, which is showing now the longevity of weed seeds in the soil, which the good news is it's not very long, we need to do the best job we can at trying to ensure some of these escaped weeds aren't producing seed. So by the end of the year, we've really made no progress towards diminishing some of the weed seeds that we have in our soils that will cause problem in future growing seasons. Don't know how well you can see this other than the dollar figure there. With Dr. Keeling, we've tried to put together likely scenarios and what they would cost. And not that this fits on your farm, but this scenario here in conventional till involves the yellow. It involves some white at planting. It involves an early post, and this system happens to be XtendFlex. So we're using one of the approved dicambas with glyphosate, and we're probably using some residual. If not at the first early post, we're using it mid-post, because that should take some pressure off of the need for a future foliar application of dicamba and Roundup. Same principle applies on the Enlist side, where we're using one of the two approved 2,4-D choline formulations. And then lastly, we've got a lay-by in here. And lay-by may not be a very commonly used practice, but we've certainly seen some data in recent years that really shows some of these late emerging weeds aren't coming through when we're laying by with something like a Diuron or a Caprol or some other lay-by treatment. Okay, the scenario changes slightly as you change tillage practices. And here, instead of tilling, we're starting clean with residual herbicides up front. And Valor is probably one of the more common herbicides that you're using, but there's other options, and I'll share with you a few of those other options. But in this scenario, it's something pre-plant, and we're probably using some dicamba or 2,4-D early as well, and some of that's dictated by the germplasm that you're using. And we may be using some paraquat at plant following the training that we'll be receiving sometime earlier this year. Okay, and also some Caprol that's going to provide that residual activity. And from there, the two systems really aren't that different. But the principle of starting clean is achieved, whether it be tilling and a dinitroanilin or something like a Valor and a Paraquat and maybe a white herbicide at plant. Okay. So thankfully in cotton, I believe we still have lots of options. And we've added to some of those options with some of the newer technologies that we've seen in the last couple of years. And normally it's at this time when I try to show you some charts of everything that is available. Some of you more seasoned growers are aware of the options. Some of the growers in this room that may not be quite so seasonal, as we're seeing some of our Roundup-only systems fail, we need to revisit some of the older residuals. So Delaney Foster, graduate student in our program, has put together a pretty nice one-page front and back guide that she's going to go through and hit some of the highlights. I'll pass out the guide, so by the end of our time together, you can at least leave with knowing what options do we have at different times during the growing season when we're trying to manage weeds in cotton. I'm going to come back and share with you some data and then entertain some questions before our time is up.
Well, good afternoon. Thank you. So while Dr. Dautre is passing out the handout that I'm going to go over, I just wanted to take a minute and introduce myself. Okay, is that better? Yeah, okay. So I wanted to take a minute and introduce myself. Like Dr. Dautre said, I'm Delaney Foster. I'm one of his master's students at Texas Tech. Before my time at Texas Tech, I lived in Georgia, so I moved to Lubbock about a year ago. And yesterday, I made mention that I thought Georgia was God's country, and then my slides didn't work, so I had to go through my presentation without any slides, so I'm not going to say that today. But Georgia was pretty great. I did my bachelor's degree at a little school called Abraham Baldwin Agricultural College. It was a four-year state college where probably two-thirds of the students were agricultural majors. Most of them were farm kids that came to get their four-year degree for a little cheaper than you could get at UGA. But during my time at ABAC, I worked at the University of Georgia's Tifton campus. I worked for a weed scientist named Stanley Culpepper there, and I also interned for Syngenta for 2 years in research and development there. So a little bit of a disclaimer before we start. This isn't a complete list of herbicides available. This is a list of commonly used herbicides in cotton. I'd say that the majority of them, maybe 90% of your options, are on that list. But it's not a complete list. And you should always carefully read and follow herbicide labels for your rates, tank mix partners, and plant back restrictions. So Dr. Dautre kind of mentioned this a little bit earlier, but what's the recipe for success? To me, that includes 4 to 5 herbicide applications in the season. That includes a preplant incorporated if you're in a conventional tillage setting, or a burn down if you're in a no-till or a conservation tillage setting. And this happens several weeks before planting. After that follows a pre-emergence herbicide application. This happens at planting, right behind your planter. Following that are 2 post-emergence applications, 1 early, 1 maybe mid-season. And then maybe following that is a lay-by or a post-directed application so that you can end the season clean. So starting at the beginning, we'll start with our PPI herbicide options, pre-plant incorporated. These are the dinitroanilins that Dr. Dautre made mention of earlier. These are our yellow herbicides. For optimal weed control with these, you want to use a two-pass incorporation system with whatever incorporation equipment you're using. And your rate for these, and most of the pre-emergence herbicides, are dependent upon your soil type. So your first option for this is Treflan or generic trifluralin products. This is 1 to 2 pints per acre, just depending upon your soil type. Another option for PPI is Prowl or generic pendimethalin products. These are both your yellows. Prowl is also dependent upon soil type, and you want to apply within 60 days of planting for optimal weed control. So if you're using a burn down for your conservation or no-till, Prowl is also an option. The rate's a little bit different if you're using it in the burn down setting. This just gives you a little bit of residual weed control. If you notice on the handout for the dicamba and the 2,4-D technologies, it just says to see your herbicide label. That's because these are a little bit tricky when it comes to using them for a burn down, because it depends on which cotton technology you plan on planting, which ones you can use, and when you can use them for a burn down. So we're going to go through that really quickly. If you plan on using a dicamba product, you can use Extendamax or Fexapan as long as you plan on planting ExtendFlex cotton. You can't use either of these formulations if you don't plan on using ExtendFlex cotton. And that's only because we live in a region where we receive less than 25 inches of rainfall. Places like Georgia, they can use these formulations and plant non-tolerant cotton, but that's because they receive enough rainfall. But if you'd like to use Ingenia, you can use this with no plant back restriction if you plan on planting ExtendFlex cotton, or you can use it if you plan on planting non-tolerant cotton, as long as you wait 42 days and have a minimum of 1 inch rainfall or overhead irrigation. This is the same if you plan on using Tavium. Tavium is a premix of dicamba and S-metolachlor. And so you can use this with no plant back restriction with dicamba tolerant cotton, or with the 42 day plus 1 inch irrigation for non-tolerant cotton. For 2,4-D formulations, that's Enlist One or Enlist Duo. You can use these with no plant back restriction with Enlist cotton, or you can use them at least 30 days prior to planting if you plan on planting non-tolerant cotton. Same thing with Enlist Duo. Enlist Duo is the premix of 2,4-D and glyphosate. Some other burn down herbicide options that aren't the auxin technologies are Roundup or generic glyphosates, Valor or flumioxazin. With the Valor, you want to make sure that you wait 21 days before you start planting and have at least 1 inch of irrigation. And then also Gramoxone or generic Paraquat, as long as you've had your Paraquat training. So for our pre-emergence herbicides, I'll go through these kind of quickly because the rates are on the handout that you have. Those options are Prowl or your generic pendimethalin products, Caprol or generic Prometrin. Also, a lot of these you shouldn't use on your coarse soils, so your sand or your loamy sand soils, because of cotton injury. Some more of those options are Direx or generic Diuron, Cotteran or generic Flometuron. Warrant can be used without a soil restriction. Reflex can be used, or generic Fomasafen products, as long as you don't use those on coarse soils as well, and as long as you have at least 1/2 inch of irrigation applied before your cotton cracks. Some more pre-emergence options are Staple LX or generic Pyrethriabac, and Break or Floridone. This is just a photo of a trial that I had this year that was looking at different pre-emergence herbicides. The photo on the left has no pre-emergence herbicide. You see all these pigweeds or careless weeds. The photo on the right is a plot that did receive a pre-emergence herbicide. You see maybe a couple of escapes. Those would hopefully be gotten when you go through with your first post-emergence application. But, I mean, really the difference is great. So pre-emergence herbicides are really important. Looking at the back of your handout, or the post-emergence options, those two post-emergence topical options that I talked about earlier should include a post-emergence herbicide such as Liberty, glyphosate, Extendamax, Ingenia, 2,4-D, whatever that herbicide may be, depending on your technology, plus, hopefully, a residual herbicide. These include Warrant, Staple, Prowl, Dual, or your S-metolachlor products, or Outlook. These can all be applied early post. They give you a little bit more soil residual activity so that hopefully you can extend the period before your next post-emergence application. So then what you tank mix that with will depend on what cotton varieties you planted, what cotton technologies you planted. So if you planted an ExtendFlex system, you can use Extendamax or Fexapan. You can use Ingenia, Liberty, Roundup, or Tavium. Tavium is the premix of dicamba and S-metolachlor. If you planted a Glytol or Liberty Link system, you can use Liberty or Roundup. If you have an Enlist system, you can use Enlist 1, Enlist Duo, which is the premix of 2,4-D and glyphosate, Liberty or Roundup. And then we have our lay-by or our post-directed residuals. These come in late season after those topical applications when cotton's probably blooming. And these just help you end the season clean. They help keep those late season pigweed from emerging, and those include Direx or Diuron, Caprol or Prometrin, Roundup or glyphosate. They can also include Valor or Flumioxazin, Zidua or Pyroxasulfone. This graph was taken from a trial that I did this year looking at different herbicide systems. So all of these bars represent a different herbicide system. And what I want to point out is that it didn't matter what the system was. All of these bars, they got a pre-emergence herbicide, an early post, and a mid post. But the difference is the red bars did not receive a lay-by post-directed application of Diuron, while the green bars did receive the post-directed application of Diuron. On the y-axis over here is pigweed or careless weed control. And you can see that careless weed control dropped about 20% late season when you didn't have that post-directed or lay-by application of Diuron. These are just some photos kind of showing that. On the left was the non-treated. This plot didn't receive any herbicide season long. That's completely unacceptable. On the right is a herbicide system that did not receive the post-directed application of Diuron. These photos were taken late season. This was an on-crop environment. But these pigweeds came up late season, and they just really thrived in that hot, dry environment that we have in August or September. And then the photo in the middle did receive a post-directed application of Diuron. Yeah, so in summary, those are the five herbicide applications that maybe you should be using, the pre-plant, pre-emergence, early post, mid-post, and the lay-by. And with that, I can take any questions, or we can take them later.
Listening to live coverage of the 2020 Caprock Crop Production Conference on All Ag All Day.
So I've got a lot of other things I'd like to share with you. Our time is a little bit limited, so I'm going to try to hit some high points and try to share with you some data that we collected in 2019. Delaney made the comment about some Diuron treatments that she saw in some of her systems. I've got another student that focused on some residual herbicides in cotton at plant, a bunch of different options that we currently have, a series of observations after plant just to try to get a better feel for the length of residual activity. So this data set, without even mentioning herbicides at the moment, was taken 4 weeks after application, 4 weeks after planting. Notice right here at 64 days after planting or after application, a number of the treatments have pretty significantly declined, but there still were several herbicides that were providing pretty effective residual palmer pigweed control 2 months later. which allows us to create some graphs that look like this. Of course, the straighter the line, the better the activity over time. And I would just say in this trial, we were pleasantly surprised with a number of products. Among those that performed very well, Reflex was one, Outlook was another, Dual was another, Cotteran looked pretty good. A few of the products that seemed to fall a little bit quickly, in part, I think, because of some rainfall that we had received shortly after application, or at least within the first month, pendimethalin and Caprol, which probably would mean in all of those systems, as the weeds start to break, whenever that happens to be, we just need to be prepared with that next strategy, which in an Extend Flexed or an Enlist or Liberty system is going to be the appropriate herbicide that matches the technology that had been planted. Timeliness, thorough coverage. I think we can get these weeds because the weeds are pretty small, but that's an awful lot of pressure. And when I mentioned earlier, I think a good initial backbone formula for successful weed control is using a dinitroaniline. If we can get 80% control following a pendimethalin or a trifluralin, that's a lot less weeds that we now need to rely on our dicamba 2,4-D, Liberty, Staple, Roundup, whatever it is that we're using post-emergence. I want to update you at least with the idea. I don't actually have any data. You know we buried some seed several years ago. It's actually a five-year study. We buried several different weed species, but Palmer pigweed's the only one I'm going to talk about this afternoon. Three different locations, two different depths, extractions every year, because the question is, how long do pigweed seed last? I didn't know the answer. I know the answer for some of the classical classroom-type discussions, 50 years for field bindweed, 80 years or 90 years for wormwood, primrose is also pretty long, but what about Palmer pigweed? Well, the data would suggest that it's pretty rapid in its decline. The viability doesn't last all that long, which means, I think, several years of intensive weed management as best we can. And thinking of the principle of not letting escaped weeds produce seed, the population that was most challenging to us in 2019, the window by which those seeds are going to be viable isn't that long. After 24 months, it was less than 10%. Now, 10% of a pretty large number is, that's a lot of weed seed. But 10% is far better than viability that's 40, 50, or 60%. We've had a second burial just to try to convince ourselves that this trend is real, that we didn't just start with a population that wasn't very hardy. And it's our hope, of course, that these two different burials, the data will match. Here's some more new data I'd like to share with you. Another student is focusing in on the use of Liberty in an Extend Flex or in an Enlist system. And our thought was, when we can use dicamba, is dicamba followed by dicamba better than introducing Liberty in one of those timings? Or in an Enlist system? Is Enlist Duo followed by Enlist Duo better than introducing Liberty as a part of that system? So these were complicated studies, lots of different weed sizes. This is some data from the Extend Flex. The black bars represent the smallest weeds where the first application went out when the weeds were no bigger than 4 inches. The data would suggest here that introducing Liberty cost us nothing from a weed control standpoint. From a resistance management standpoint, it's always good to introduce different modes of action. Now, as the weeds got bigger, the control declined, but never did we see that the use of Liberty cost us from a weed control standpoint. Now, I've seen years where it has, and so have you. The use of Liberty is very much based on weed size, thorough coverage, higher carrier volume, coarse humidity, succulent weeds, all of that helps. So there are limitations. But in this trial, over 2 years, we saw that using liberty was every bit as good whether we used it first or second compared to using dicamba twice. Now, a slightly different study, but the focus was the same, introducing liberty in an Enlist Duo system in the same thing. Smaller weeds, it didn't matter. Bigger weeds, the control was less, but introducing liberty was helpful from adding a new mode of action. Okay. In this trial, we used Enlist 1 alone, which apparently isn't very common. We should have used it in some tank mixture, perhaps with Liberty, but Enlist 1 alone didn't look as good as the other two foliars, that being Enlist Duo or Liberty. But in future trials, we will mix it as apparently the technology was intended. I've mentioned to you several times weed resistance. I don't think we need to get into a whole lot of additional information. I would encourage you to go to the website, weedscience.org. It updates, if not daily, weekly. Since I spoke to you last year, 13 new weeds have been introduced to the list. The main modes of action have stayed the same. The mode of action 4 and 5 is the glyphosate and the auxin technologies. So the weeds resistant to Roundup right now, that's the fourth most common group of weeds developing resistance. The fifth most common group are from the auxins, the 2,4-D and the dicambas. So what is different is when we introduced Roundup, we didn't have any resistant weeds. As we're introducing new technology that will withstand dicamba and 2,4-D, we've already got them out there. In fact, here's some data from Kansas that showed on some of their research farms that were conservation tillage frequent applications of 2,4-D that were no longer responding to the herbicide. They collected seed, brought it in the greenhouse, made some sprays, and they had plants that were withstanding 16 times the X rate being a half a pound. 8 pounds of 2,4-D was applied, far right, plants still survived. They took the same seed, it exposed it to dicamba. Not different rates, but just the X rate, and they had plenty of survivors. So it is possible. As we look at these new technologies, if we're not thinking in terms of using them as a part of a system, these could be our plants. I hope that's not the case. And I've said this before to you, I think these technologies are good. They may not be great from the opportunity to solely rely on the dicamba or the 2,4-D. They're good. They're even better when we consider dinitroanilins at plants, residuals early, mid-post, and even something at lay-by. Here's a trial we did this past year, pre-plant burn down, a bunch of different herbicides. The focus was on kochia. For some of you, kochia may be the second most problematic weed. For some of you, it may be the most problematic weed. Lots of kochia present. We need to burn it down. Probably when they're smaller. Lots of different treatments we used, and usually the treatment was consistent. Whatever we sprayed, it worked great, it worked pretty good, it worked kind of good. But in this trial where we sprayed 2,4-D, it looked just a little bit strange because as good as 2,4-D was on most of the kochia, there were a few that simply didn't look like they were responding. And I don't know if you can see them. I can barely see them, and I'm in the front of the room. But we let those four plants go. We collected seed. In fact, just earlier today, we've been thrashing some of the seed, and these are going into a greenhouse. And we're going to see, do we actually have some plants that don't seem to be responding to not just 2,4-D, but other herbicides that we use in a burn-down manner. We were also a part of a very extensive survey last fall where we focused on about 100 different locations, far northern panhandle, down around Amarillo, around Plainview, around Lubbock, and we're looking at those seeds as well, those seedlings, and how they're responding to a bunch of products that we use as a burn down. We have a study that we just concluded 2 years. The years were so similar, we were able to combine the data. We looked at burn down 45, 30, and 15 days before planting just to look at the success of a variety of treatments. I learned a couple of things. The first thing I learned is 45 and 30 were better than 15. As we let those weeds get just that much bigger, as we got closer to planting, that first flush that came, that we were successful at controlling them 45 and 30 days before, we were much less successful 15 days before. Secondly, I would say some of the winners in this trial, lead off plus 2,4-D, lead off plus Roundup, were pretty good. Starain Ultra with 2,4-D, Starain Ultra with Roundup looked pretty good. Dicamba, in the form of Fexapan in this trial, was the only treatment that was successful when we waited until 15 days before planting. You know, in that system, it needs to be an Xtend Flex technology. If we're using Fexapan or Dicamba at the normal use rate that close to planting. Two new technologies that I would like you to be aware of, one of them coming sooner than the other.
Okay, well, mine's the not so soon one. So my thesis work is this. Has anyone ever heard of the herbicide Balance used in corn? I see a couple people nodding their heads. Yes. The active ingredient in Balance is isoxaflutol. Isoxaflutol is an HPPD inhibitor. That's its mode of action, how it works, how it kills a plant. There are currently no HPPD inhibitors. No, there are. Brake. Yeah, Brake's an HPPD. Yeah, okay. So Brake is labeled in cotton. That's an HPPD inhibitor. But BASF has made HPPD-tolerant cotton. So this cotton will be tolerant to the herbicide isoxaflutol. Isoxaflutol is a pre-emergent herbicide. So hopefully it'll be labeled for pre-emergence and early post-emergence use. So my trials were with isoxaflutol in this HPPD-tolerant cotton. We looked at herbicide systems, we looked at the crop tolerance, we looked at the efficacy of it used in a system. But this graph is showing a trial that we did looking at isoxaflutol tank mixed with other cotton pre-emergence herbicides. So what we did was we sprayed it pre by itself, and we also sprayed it pre tank mixed with other herbicides like Cotteran, Caprol, Diuron, Dual, Prowl, Warrant, Staple, basically anything that you can spray pre in cotton, we mixed it with to see if it would extend that soil residual weed control. And what we found was kind of exciting, and I know it's hard to see on this graph, but this axis is pigweed control. And it goes from 100, the bottom is 86%, which is still pretty phenomenal. And this red line right here is the isoxaflutol used alone. That's the very bottom line. At 56 days after application, so several weeks, we were still at 87% pigweed control. But when you tank mixed isoxaflutol with these other herbicides that we're already using, like Caprol, Cotteran, Diuron, whatever you chose, it extended that residual weed control. Now, some were better than others. Some were still close to 100% at 56 days after application, which is exceptional. Some were closer to 94%, which hopefully when you make that early post application, it would pick those smaller weeds up, because hopefully your early post is somewhere in here where we're still at 96, 98%. But this is exciting because this cotton will be available in 3 or 4 years. Hopefully this herbicide will do us some good in extending soil residual weed control so that maybe we can put some less pressure on those post-emergent systems, less pressure on those dicamba and 2,4-D tolerant weeds that we looked at earlier. So yeah, that's one of them.
So something else that's going to be new, and I was at a meeting just a couple of days ago in San Antonio. This is some sorghum technology that I think we're going to see for the first time in 2021 called iGrowth. I don't know if you've heard of the name iGrowth, but this is some sorghum that will tolerate a soybean and a sunflower herbicide. It is an imidazolinone classification, a herbicide that has activity both through the soil and when applied foliarly. The sorghum tolerance that I saw last year in some trials looked very good. Just like pretty much everything else that we've talked about and Delaney just mentioned, these new technologies that are coming forward will provide an additional tool, but this technology won't be anything standalone either. So for those of you growing sorghum and already have experienced the importance of things like metulachlor or atrazine, likely those are still going to be needed within this system. What this system will provide is some additional grass activity that maybe currently is lacking. I didn't spend much time looking at the program. Caitlin, maybe you can help me, yes or no. Is an oxen training a part of what we're doing today? No.
No, but there's a card on the table for one on February 4th.
February the 4th, there's an oxen training for those of you that can participate there. There's also other trainings that have been scheduled at many county programs. I think I've planned for four of them at the A&M Center. This training slightly different from last year. It's not a two-hour training. It's a one. It will focus both on the dicamba and the 2,4-D technology. And one of the main focuses is what's happened within the state that will allow us to use the product slightly different from the federal label. So anybody who plans to be applying dicamba will need to be going through one of these trainings, and on the 2,4-D side, working under a certified applicator, anybody applying needs to be a part of training as well. The other training that I made reference of a few times earlier, and I'm going to close, is the mandatory paraquat training, a mandate that came from EPA last March. This is an online training only. It's not administered through the A&M Extension Service, but it's administered through an online e-extension website. The website URL, if you can't see it, is usparaquattraining.com. Let me say that one more time, usparaquattraining.com. Also was in a PCG newsletter sometime late December. If you can go back and search for that, we put out an announcement to try to alert you that anybody planning to spray paraquat this year needs to go through this 30-minute online training. The focus is not on the proposed closed system requirement that may or may not come to pass. The focus is solely on understanding the potency of a relatively old herbicide. Unfortunately, there have been far too many instances where the herbicide was put into unapproved, unmarked containers, accidental ingestion, and deaths have occurred. That is the focus of this 30-minute training. Once you go through the training and pass a test at the end, which it may take you a few times, it took me three times, but I am now certified. And the certification is good for 3 years. So unlike the oxen training, which has to be renewed every year, once you pass this one this spring, you're good for 3 years. Okay. I talked fast. I apologize. Had a lot to share. I hope something was maybe new and perhaps useful. If I have a minute or two, Caitlin, I'll take questions now. If not, I'm here for the break. Okay, do have a minute or two. Any thoughts or questions? Anything I said, didn't say? Anything I said wrong? Anything Delaney said wrong? Yes, sir.
On this deal we have to take on the computer?
Yes.
How many times can we take it before it kicks us out?
So the question was, I think, on the paraquat training, how many times before the computer is going to shut down or start smoking? I guess I didn't quite get there. But the fact that, you know, three times and eventually we made it through, I bet you can do it in two or three times as well. Any other thoughts? So how do you get that certificate? Then at the end, you hit a print button. So I'm hoping you got a printer attached to your computer, and you'll get the certificate right then and there. The labeling is going to change on these paraquat containers. It'll say you need to be certified, and it'll have some information in Spanish and English, and one sip can kill, and a few other things that will be new. But what you need to know today is paraquat use in 2020 is different. You need that piece of paper showing that you went through the information.
Thank you.
All right, I'm here through break. If you have anything you want to visit with me or share with me individually, that's great too. I would always encourage, as you put together your weed management program, and if you have any thoughts or questions that maybe Dr. Keeling or I can help you with, don't hesitate to find us at the A&M Research Center. Wish you all the best. Thank you.